Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. This is the Leaders Toolbox podcast with Dr. Richard Gassaway. If you do have any questions for Dr. Gassaway, please send an email to podcast@firehouse.com. Rich, thank you for joining us again this month. We appreciate the efforts that you're sharing with the fire service, and what's going on with you?
Well, thanks for having me, Pete. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to contribute to Leaders Toolbox at Firehouse. I got some pretty exciting news. I'm retiring as a fire chief. I've been in the business 30 years, and along the way I've had some wonderful opportunities to contribute to fire departments, six fire departments in three states. And I'm going to hang up the boots. About a year ago, I went to school to become a doctor and earned my PhD. And that has opened up a wonderful new group of opportunities for me, and I'm very excited and very looking forward to that. And I bid farewell to the Roseville Fire Department and the incredibly dedicated men and women who serve the community here in Roseville. I'm just in awe of your dedication. I'm so proud of the things that you've done and the contributions that you have made in the past 10 years. Thank you. Carry on. Do great work. You've got some good leadership in the department, and you're going to continue to do great. I'm staying in Roseville, no moving. The kind of work that I'm going to be doing into the future is going to allow me to be able to work from home and do some traveling, and it's really really exciting time for me, and I'm looking forward to this next chapter in my life.
Well, congratulations, Chief. A lot of folks have learned from you, and many more will be able to learn your lessons. So we look forward to seeing you at the trade shows and at the other events where you're going to be.
Thank you.
And I guess we can mention right now your website, too, for those who haven't been on there yet.
Yep, I do have a website. It's www.richgassaway.com. The spelling of my last name is G-A-S-A-W-A-Y. It's usually a link on the bottom of the podcast. If you're interested in hosting a program for your department, your county, region, state conference, just send me a message through the Contact Me link on the website. There's even some options that you can use a program offering as a fundraiser for your department. So if it's something that you're interested in, reach out to me and we'll discuss the possibilities of bringing a program to your area. And I appreciate that opportunity from Firehouse, too.
Well, thank you, Chief. We will put a link to your site at the bottom of the podcast player page, so if you do have a chance, go ahead and click on that and see what Rich has to offer. We'll get into the show here. If you do have any questions for Rich, send us an email to podcast@firehouse.com. Chief, the first question we have for you is, I recently retired from serving 20 years as an assistant chief in a large career department, and I'm about to start my second career as the fire chief in a smaller combination department with 15 full-time members and 100 volunteers. In my career department, the chief was called the chief, no exceptions. In fact, I'm reasonably sure we had members who didn't even know his real first name. In my old department, all chief officers were called chief, including me, and I'm comfortable with that. However, I'm not sure if the same formal practice is in place in my new department. I want to get off on the right foot with my new employees, and I'm not sure whether I should be addressed as chief or addressed by my first name. I can see the issues and benefits for it being both ways. What's your thoughts?
Well, I think there are some challenges and some benefits to having it done either way. I have some general thoughts on it. First, using the rank supports the paramilitary nature of the fire service. And you see that in, you know, military settings. So it's, you know, for people who are in the fire service who come from the military or who are traditionalists in the paramilitary design are going to be comfortable in using and hearing formal rank structure and using the chief instead of the name. Using chief as a title shows respect for the rank. No doubt about that. It also shows a formal authority figure when somebody refers to somebody in their rank versus by their name. I think that if you choose to be called chief, the message that you're sending to the department is that your relationship with your staff is going to be all business, and that your expectation is that you are called by your rank, that they respect the rank, and the informalities are dispensed with. Using the name versus the rank, I think, is a more contemporary type of a leadership style. I don't know that using the name necessarily shows a disrespect for the leader. I think it's just a more informal and relaxed approach to the relationship. You know, the relationship in this scenario would be more casual instead of all business. And I think that people could make arguments either way as to which style would lead to team cohesiveness or productivity within the ranks. I'm not here to advocate that one or the other is any better or worse. You know, here where I live, in the schools, you call your teachers Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so, but there is one school in our system that is kind of a contemporary type of school where the kids who go to that school call the teachers by their first names. And some of the parents like that, and some of the parents don't like that. I've heard comments cut both ways, whether parents like their kids calling their teachers, by the first name and having a more informal relationship. Some of the parents argue that makes the teacher more approachable. Maybe if a chief is called by his name instead of by his rank, then maybe that segues and is more approachable. I've heard parents say that calling teachers by their formal name, Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so, shows respect. So maybe calling the chief instead of by their first name is a more formal show of respect. And while on the topic of respect, I think that the respect for a position is one that is commanded by the position, and using rank shows respect for that position. But I think that respect for the person is earned and not commanded. And using the name, using a person's name instead of their rank is not necessarily a sign of disrespect for the position. I remember a quote from a movie that I had saw once that's called Taps, and the movie's probably 15 or 20 years old, so you'd have to go to the video store to rent it. But I remember a quote in there that says that soldiers will respect the position, but they will not respect the leader unless it is earned. And I think that that's in play here, too, is, there will be a formal respect for the position that's commanded, but the respect for the person is earned. I think for this leader, instead of asking me and going with my advice, I think there's a good opportunity here for this leader to ask the firefighters what they would prefer, and then ask them why. And I think that would make for some good conversation, some good kind of icebreaker conversation with the firefighters. And I think that this leader would learn a lot about the organization and their beliefs and philosophies by having this discussion. I don't think that everyone's going to agree. You're probably going to get some who's going to say chief and some who's going to say name, but, hear it out and hear their perspectives. And I think you'll come away with a good understanding in general whether your organization that you're going into is a paramilitaristic type of organization or one that is more contemporary in their views. This issue, this question, I found it intriguing and interesting because it really gets to the heart of one aspect of an organization's culture. You know, and we hear a lot talking about fire departments and fire department culture, and you know, what you call the leader really does get to the heart of one part of the culture of the organization. And it as innocent as what name you call the chief may seem on the surface, it really does have a deeper message as to what is the beliefs of the organization. If I were the chief, I certainly wouldn't make what the organization calls me issue number one. And I certainly wouldn't make it the first thing that I sought to change in the organization. In other words, if they called the old chief, go with it for a while. If they called the old chief by their name, go with it for a while. I don't think that that's the first thing you want to change and create some kind of division or alienation between you and your staff simply based on the name that you're called. And in this particular case, I would say probably better to kind of go with the flow, get the consensus of the organization, and start out in that direction. I think if the culture of this organization is contemporary, and this leader would demand a paramilitaristic type of a use of his title, he may be asking for some pushback. And I think vice versa, you know, if it's a paramilitaristic organization and he tries the contemporary approach, I think he may find some resistance or some confusion among the staff as well because of their culture. And, you know, there's other things that tie in to this organizational culture as to whether they're paramilitaristic or they're a contemporary styled organization. You know, what you call the chief is one. But, you know, if this chief comes in and he starts to look around, I think he'll see some signs and that indicate the general nature of the organization, whether it's a militaristic or a contemporary type design. For example, you know, look at the uniform standards. What kind of uniforms do they wear? You know, a T-shirt uniform or no uniform would probably say more contemporary. A formal button-down shirt uniform with you know, with badges and collar brass and insignia would probably say more paramilitaristic is their preferred style. And I use that as an example because if you're going to come in and try to be contemporary and you see a sign that the organization isn't they don't dress contemporary, you know, they're not wearing T-shirts and golf shirts and the, you know, the kind of things that a more relaxed contemporary organization would wear, that'd be an indicator that, you know, you're seeing a symptom as to, I don't want to say symptom, that sounds bad, you're seeing a sign as to how the organization might be already entrenched in their culture. Look at the grooming standards. You know, are there grooming standards? How do the people, you know, wear their hair, care for themselves personally? You know, does that pride come over onto the job? Look at the regimentation of the daily routines. Are there set assignments that people do certain things at certain times in certain ways? Or is it just a, hey, we all know something. We all know the work that needs to get done. Just as long as it gets done before we go home, you know. And again, you know, one is paramilitaristic and one is contemporary. Look at the training. You know, is the training formal, regimented, you know, standardized? You know, are people checked off, or is the training more, you know, casual and formal? Look at the radio protocols and discipline. Listen to the radio traffic, you know, and that'll tell you a lot as to how the you know, organization is cultured. Look at the station and the vehicles and how they're cleaned and maintained and kept. That'll tell you as to whether the organization is one that's, prim and proper, or if it's one that's more, casual and happy-go-lucky. Look how they address the citizens and the patients in the community. You know, if they're addressing citizens and patients as Mr. So-and-so and Mrs. So-and-so, or are they addressing the citizens and the patients by their first name? And again, these are all these are all signs of the underlying culture of the organization, whether it's paramilitaristic or contemporary. In closing, my advice to the chief would be to come in, observe, and for this particular aspect of the job, either ask the firefighters or go with the flow and let the firefighters call the chief what they're comfortable calling the chief. But I would encourage this person to resist the temptation of making what he or she is called the job order number one, because I think that has the potential to create some consternation and some alienation early on in their tenure, and they don't need that. So that's my advice for Do You Call Me Chief?
Well, thanks, Rich. That's where I grew up on Long Island. My father was an ex-chief, and that was about 30 years ago, and he still gets the respect as a chief, even though he's been through two other departments since. It's always been an interesting policy. You meet somebody at a trade show, they're a chief in a department, but I've always addressed them as chief because that's how I was brought up, but they want to be called Rich or Tom or Joe or Neil or Alex. So that's always an interesting topic depending on how the folks want to be addressed. So
I thought it was interesting that this, of all the things that the new chief here would probably have on his agenda to take on, that he would ask this question. And I wonder if he's asking the question with the knowledge that what he or she is called really does have that deeper meaning or deeper tie to the culture of the organization. I won't know because it wasn't in the question, but I wonder if they're really seeing that there's a lot in the name.
Oh, I agree. And again, at the trade shows, it's always interesting to see how people like to be addressed, knowing that their status within their city is one thing, but they're not in their city, they're outside. It's always a different way. So,
sure.
Well, I appreciate you answering that question. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back and tackle another question. This is the Leader's Toolbox on radio@firehouse.com.
Radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox on radio@firehouse.com with host Dr. Richard Gassaway. Rich, where will you be? I know on your website you have a listing, but for those who haven't gotten to your site yet, where can we find you? I know you'll be at Firehouse Expo, but what other cities can we find you? What other events?
Well, now that I've had the opportunity to retire, the travel schedule is going to hopefully fill up and give me some new and exciting things to do. June 8th to 11th, I'm going to be at the NFPA World Safety Conference at the McCormick Place in Chicago, and I'm giving a presentation there on fireground command decision making and the barriers that impact the situation awareness of fireground commanders. July 10th and 11th, I'm going to be at Oklahoma State University giving a presentation to their research symposium as part of their International Fire Service Journal of Leadership and Management. They have a research symposium there each year, and I will be attending that and giving them, again, a presentation on fireground command decision-making. July 21 to 26 is the Firehouse Expo in Baltimore. I'll be there, and I'll be doing a couple of programs and maybe even a podcast or two recorded at the Firehouse Expo. August 6th to 8th, I will be at the Louisiana Firemen's Association Conference in New Orleans, and I'll be giving a program on how firefighters get killed as a result of losing situation awareness at incident scenes August 25th to 29th. I will be at the Fire Rescue International in Dallas, Texas, and giving a half-day pre-conference symposium on fire ground command decision-making and situation awareness. September 12th at the Salisbury Fire Department in Salisbury, North Carolina, giving a program on leadership. And October 5th at the University of Maryland's Fire Rescue Institute, I'm giving a program to their Executive Development Series in College Park, Maryland, on fireground command decision-making and the barriers that challenge a commander's situation awareness. If you want to know the other places I'm going to be, that you want to look me up, or if you're interested in hosting a program, again, that information is available on my website.
Okay, and again, we'll have a link to richgasaway.com at the bottom of the podcast player page. If you do have any questions for Rich, please send an email to podcast@firehouse.com. Rich, another question from one of our listeners. There is a member of our department whose health has been deteriorating over the last 5 years, yet he is still allowed to respond to calls and perform the duties of a firefighter. He has uncontrolled diabetes, and it has led to him having several toes amputated, and there have been several fire incidents where he has suffered from low blood sugar that he had to be treated at the scene by our firefighters. Why would he be allowed to continue to serve with this condition? Am I right to be concerned for my safety because of his ability to perform is unpredictable?
This is an interesting and challenging dilemma. I think that as firefighters get older, and I don't know if this firefighter that has this diabetes is old or young, but as we all get older, we tend to acquire certain physical conditions and challenges, you know, whether it's, diabetes or heart conditions or arthritis or, you know, whatever it be that slows us down or causes us some challenges in our ability to perform our duties. Clearly, from what this person describes, this firefighter has a serious and significant medical condition that should be a concern for this firefighter and should be a concern for the department as well. When I look at this, I look at it from a variety of perspectives. And I'm not an attorney, but the first one I would look at is a legal perspective. There is a law called the Americans with Disabilities Act that requires employers to make reasonable accommodations for employees with certain conditions. That doesn't mean that every person who has a disability has to have some special accommodation. I would refer them to get legal advice before they try to determine whether they need to or have or can make a reasonable accommodation for this firefighter. But the law is there and something that they should be aware of. The second thing is concern for the possibility of discrimination against this firefighter because he has a medical condition that is perceived to be a detriment to the department. And I'm not saying that believing that is discriminatory, but I would ask, what are the medical conditions that other members on the department have that might be limiting their abilities to contribute? So, in other words, don't single out this person as, you know, someone who has a problem and then everybody else is okay because, you know, this person could hire an attorney who would say, okay, well, let's just see the medical records of all the members and their fitness and their ability to perform their duties. So be careful not to single this firefighter out. I think the determination of someone's physical ability to perform their job or not should be made by a doctor and not by the fire department. I don't care how many people in the fire department think this person is incapable of performing their duties for a medical condition. That is a determination to be made by a doctor. If you make that determination and you dismiss this person from the fire department and they're smart enough to get an attorney, the attorney's going to put the chief on the witness stand and say, let's see your medical credentials that allowed you to make the determination that this person is not fit to perform the duties. You know, let's see the test, let's see the analysis, let's see the proof, and you don't want to be in that position. You don't want to be trying to defend a decision that should be made by a medical professional. So avoid that. So that's legal. The second one is, from a medical perspective, what is being described is an unstable medical condition, which also, in short order, can leave this firefighter incapacitated, which then can cause them significant more risk to their personal harm and their personal health by being in that position on the job. And we know that firefighting is a stressful occupation, and that stress can impact the insulin stability of a person. So under stress, this firefighter may be even more likely to have fluctuations or imbalances in their insulin level because the stress puts greater demands on the body and greater demands for sugar usage, and sugar is produced more, glucose is released under stress. And I'm not going to get into the medical part. I'm not a medical doctor either, but know that stress does contribute to the challenges of diabetes. So you know, that's some medical perspective. Third is the policy issue here. This person doesn't offer up all the information that I need, so I'd ask the question of, does the department offer annual physical exams for the members to see their baseline and ongoing fitness for duty? Do they have policies that establish fitness for duty? You know, what determines by policy of the department a person who's, you know, fit for duty or not fit for duty? Do they have adopted standards for fitness? In other words, do they have anything adopted that says if you have these certain conditions, you can't be a firefighter? Or if you have these certain conditions, you can be a firefighter, but with a certain accommodation. And before you say, well, my gosh, that sounds so ominous and complex, some of that work has already been done in the International Association of Fire Chiefs and International Association of Firefighters. The IFC and the IFF have come together to do a wellness initiative. And then there's also the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA, 1581, the standard for medical requirements for firefighters. So if you look at the NFPA 1581, there is a document there that sets the standards for what the requirements are to be a firefighter and the conditions that you can have and the conditions that would prohibit you. But, you know, if you're going to look at these documents, you should adopt one of them as the standard for your organization that applies to all members. You can't just simply pull it off the shelf and apply it to this person. You know, open up the standard and say, look, it says right here you can't be on the department because you have uncontrolled diabetes. That would be, you know, kind of back to the legal issue of you're singling out and applying a standard that maybe your community hasn't adopted to an individual, and I don't know that necessarily passes the smell tests for fairness for me, and it might not for his or her attorney either. So that standard should be adopted department-wide and applied across the full spectrum of the organization. Safety issue, I think a firefighter with this condition, the fact that it's uncontrolled, the fact that they've had incidents at scenes where they've had to be treated, that puts the crews at risk. I think it puts that firefighter at risk. I think it puts the citizens at risk. You know, nothing was said as to whether this firefighter drives a fire department vehicle. If they're a driver and they have this uncontrolled diabetes, they're putting a lot of people at risk on the street and in the apparatus because they could have a reaction that might cause an accident. Is this person driving their personal vehicle to the station to go on calls? You get a call, you drop the tones, the person driving the station is, essentially representing the fire department or on duty, on the clock, whatever, while they're responding to the station for the call. They get into an accident because of a diabetic reaction, which the department knew about but didn't do anything about. All kinds of safety and potential legal issues there. As far as physical exams go, I think one of the ways to address this would be to adopt a program where you provide physical exams for the firefighters. A baseline physical exam for new people coming in, or baseline for your people who are already there if you don't provide them now, is a good way of uncovering things early and a good way of establishing their health for the job, and a good way to know if something develops over time as a result of the job that they've performed and the things that they've been exposed to, heavy metals and things like that in your analysis and such. And then offer ongoing exams. I said earlier that those exams could be annual. They don't always have to be annual. Sometimes if you're a young person, I think the standard says you can have an exam every 3 years or maybe every 5 years. You look it up. Don't quote me on it. And as you get older, for sure, the exams become something that you get done annually. So, having that could help identify problems. A for-cause physical exam, if you have some reason to believe a firefighter is having some condition that is preventing them from performing their physical duties, you might have a policy that would provide for a for-cause physical exam, and you send them to be evaluated. And then probably the last one I can think of is a return-to-work physical exam after somebody's been off for some injury or medical condition, that they have a physical exam that clears them to be able to do the job before they come to work. The physicals should be conducted by a department-selected doctor, not one selected by the individual firefighter, but a doctor who's representing and looking out for the best interest of the department. Preferably, it would be good if you could find a doctor who practices occupational medicine. They tend to understand more the issues related to work and job duties and job stresses, and they're more likely to understand the demands of being a firefighter. I think when you set up with your doctor, if you have adopted a standard like the IFF or IFC initiative or the NFPA 1581, you should give that standard to the doctor so that they can become familiar with the types of things that they should be evaluating to determine a person's fitness for duty as a firefighter. And you should give the doctor the job description for the position so that the doctor understands that the duties that this person is going to be expected to perform as they're giving their physical examination. I had heard once a story of a firefighter who was went out with a knee injury, and when he got ready to come back to work, he went to his family or his orthopedic surgeon and said, "I need a back-to-work release." And the orthopedic surgeon wrote him a back-to-work release and said he's cleared to do all duties of a firefighter except crawl. Well, that presents a little bit of problems when it comes to performing the duties of a firefighter. And, you know, that orthopedic surgeon probably didn't realize that one of the essential duties of being a structural firefighter is the ability to crawl under smoke on your hands and knees and up and down stairs and over and around things. And you know, that ended up getting that person a visit to the department's physician, who then said the person couldn't perform the duties. But again, it was a doctor saying it, not the department. And that was good that that department went in that direction and did that. Ensure that the physical is job related. You know, make sure that they're, you know, testing and checking for the things that are important to being able to perform the duties of the job. And remember that a general practitioner may not understand what those physical demands of the job are. The question that comes up as I heard this question is, has this employee had a physical exam? If he has, did he pass it? And if he had one and he passed it, I'm not sure there's a lot of recourse that this department can take until they would look at the parameters of how they do their firefighter fitness. You know, adopt some standards, have a job description, have a department physician. You know, if this person had a physical exam, say, from their family practitioner, and they cleared them, and the department has no other mechanism to conduct physicals, I think the department's in a tough position because they don't have any policies in place as to how to deal with a person like this. I would always encourage them to talk with their department's legal counsel to get some advice as to how to work through it, because I'm not minimizing the risk and the safety issues that's surrounding a person with these conditions. But you know, if on the issue of the physical exam, is there an existing policy? And you know, if so, you know, has it been enforced? Can the condition that a person has be corrected? In other words, you know, is this person have uncontrolled diabetes because they haven't received proper care from a doctor and they haven't had proper control of their insulin or proper diet? And, you know, could a treatment regimen, including, you know, diet, exercise, more routine blood sugar testing and use of their insulin or an insulin pump or something like that, get this under control and allow them to be able to perform the duties of the job without becoming incapacitated with the instability of their insulin levels? Can the department make some reasonable accommodation for this person? Can this person, it doesn't say whether it's you know, career or volunteer position. In a career department, it might be a little harder to make a reasonable accommodation for somebody if you have a limited number of positions. But if you had, you know, something, say, in fire prevention or public education, that might be something the person could do to work out the, you know, the balance of their career. In a volunteer position department, there might be many other things a person could do besides the high stress duties of being a firefighter. Light duty policy. I think, you know, light duty policies are probably more in play for temporary conditions and not, you know, permanent and you know, for the balance of their career, light duty kind of work. So it might not be appropriate in this case, but I would think about other duties that this person could perform that wouldn't put them in a position of being compromising to themselves, to other firefighters, or to the community's safety. So in summary, you're really looking at this from four perspectives, from the perspective of what are the legal issues, perspective of what are the medical issues, the perspective of what are the policy issues, and then finally, what is the perspective of the safety and well-being of this firefighter, the firefighters they work with, and the public.
Well, Rich, thank you for answering that question as well, and it's a very sensitive issue, and we'll kind of link to some of the IAFF and IFC sites that could be of some assistance to this as well. So take a look for those on the podcast player page. If you do have any questions for Rich Gassaway, Leader's Toolbox, please send us an email to podcast@firehouse.com. And, Rich, we look forward to seeing you again here next month. And hopefully some of the folks who see you at the shows and listen to your podcast stop by and say hello.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I really enjoy the feedback that people give me when I'm out visiting. So please don't hesitate to come up and say hi to me.
Okay, this is the Leader's Toolbox on radio at firehouse.com. Any questions or suggestions, send us an email to podcast@firehouse.com, and we'll see you again next month.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.